Welcome in, welcome in. Let's cut this intro. Let's get this thing set. Let's get this up here. All right, perfect. Now let me do a quick sound check. Y'all know how I do to start this thing off. We are here on a Wednesday. We are checking in on a Wednesday. This is the midweek check-in for Cleveland Browns fans. All right, good. So we got the sound check going right. This is a midweek check-in, kind of switching things up a little bit. So I have been normally streaming on Fridays and just getting set up for the weekend. But starting next week, the streaming schedule will change. So I will be going live for Browns games on Sundays. I'll be streaming the audio and give you my analysis on Sundays. So I'll be doing that. I'll be going live at 12:50 because the Browns game starts at 1 o'clock. We do got the London game that's going to be starting at 9 or 9:30. I'll start 10 minutes before that game. We'll be streaming the audio to that game as well. But the change will be, instead of me streaming on Fridays, I'm going to do a Monday stream, potentially starting at 10:30 on Monday. So I'll be doing a Monday morning stream so we can, you know, after we have one night's sleep, we got time to digest what we saw in the Browns game. We'll be doing Monday morning quarterbacking, and we will be reviewing or going over everybody's feelings. So on Mondays, I definitely want y'all to tap in. I will have a couple things I'll go over that I saw, but then it'll be heavily focused on the reaction. So the viewer reaction. So tap in, send your chats too. I'll be reading all the chats. Y'all know how I interact with y'all. So that's what we'll be doing on Mondays. Then instead of waiting to stream till Friday, I'll be streaming on Wednesdays. And the reason why I'll be streaming on Wednesdays is because as the days pass, you start to get more of the stats that come out. So I want to look at some of the stats so we just have a little bit better insight. So then we can look at the Browns' next opponent stats. We can look at stats for the Browns for their previous game. At that point, I've had time to watch the All-22. To see if I still view things the same way I did on Monday, or if some of it has changed once I've seen All-22. So those are some of the changes. I like to be flexible. I saw some reactions and I saw some things and I was like, okay, it's time to switch up the schedule some, just so we can get the people what they want. You know, because it's all about the viewers, it's all about y'all. Shout out to y'all for always tapping in. So I'm a person that I do a ton of research. So besides like watching film, also let me shout something else out. Let me get this up on the screen. I want to say, where did it go? Nope, not there. Here we go. Eliminate the Gray. This is my podcast. You can get this anywhere podcasts are released. So we have that for you. Also, I have something else. On Tuesdays, I'm watching a ton, not on Tuesdays. The video releases on Tuesdays. I'm also going to release this as a podcast. It's going to be pretty short, right around 10 minutes. I'm reviewing the game film of 8 quarterbacks, and I'm giving my own insights on where I thought they were good, where I thought they were bad. It is pyramid style, so I'm starting off with the lowest person, the person who had the worst performance, I would say, and leading up to the person at the top of the mountaintop who has the highest performance. This is a video series I'm doing for the entire college football season. These videos release Tuesday mornings at 10 a.m. So be looking forward to that. So I'm watching a ton of tape, a ton of film on a lot of different guys, consuming a lot of football. Excuse me, consuming a lot of football. So wanted to let you know about that. But also, I consume a lot of like videos and things like that. And yesterday, let's get this up here for y'all. Yesterday, I was watching Coach Prime's press conference. And as I'm watching his press conference, I'm starting to realize some of the things that makes me question Kevin Stefanski. So this year, the Browns had a full quarterback competition, preseason training camp. I thought it was a bad idea. I thought that they were going to take reps away from everybody who needed reps by having 4 quarterbacks here. Funny thing is, now people are starting to see it and they're saying, hey, maybe their time is off because they didn't get all the reps together. Okay. This is something that, you know, some people, you should have saw that coming. But, okay, we'll leave it as. But also, Coach Prime, he is going to say the title to one of my videos. And I'm not saying he watched the video. I'm just saying it's an alignment with how we're thinking and viewing the situation. And let's start it here. This is going to be Coach Prime. I'm going to play a little bit more of this because the Cleveland Browns had a quarterback competition, a 4-1 at that. Colorado's in the midst of a quarterback competition, and they're going based on guys' performance, and that is what is giving guys the opportunity to perform and play. So here we go. Let's go, Coach Prime. Also, this was part of the motivating factor for me doing this show today and me just looking at things and switching up the schedule. So I got a lot just from this short press conference from Coach Prime. But let's go, Coach Prime.
Staub is the expected starter against Houston. Are you able to confirm that?
I'm not confirming nothing to y'all. Y'all know that. We ain't like that. We good. We have capable guys. Staub has been doing a phenomenal job doing and getting the majority of the reps, but I haven't made that assessment or decision yet.
Hi, Coach.
You know, in today's media, we don't care about being correct anymore. We just want to be first. And there's no subjection to you when you're wrong. Nobody says nothing. You just go with it. I'm not saying that's the case, but that's where we are in media. Nobody gives a darn about being correct and being right. Everybody just want to be first. That don't make no sense to me. I would love the integrity that we once had with media. I would love that. Let's go. I'm sorry.
Hi, Coach. Adam Oster, Tiger.
I totally agree with Coach Prime there. So when I got into this thing, at first I thought that people in the media, I started to question them because I started to notice that a lot of times they were not watching the games. They were speaking on them. They were watching the highlights. They were watching clips. They didn't have a full understanding. It was basic things they didn't know about the teams they were watching. And I was like, man, maybe this is me just feeling overconfident about how much work I'm putting in on the back end before I even, you know, get up here and click go live. But now I'm starting to realize it's not just me. I had a mini rant a couple months ago where my stream was, do you want to be first or do you want to be right? And it was essentially what Coach Prime is saying here. And nobody is there to hold the media accountable. If you watched my episode last week, I went back to when Mike Florio was saying they crush guys in the draft, but nobody follows up on it. And I kind of made it a point to just follow up on the things that they're saying to us. And I noticed that the media tends to be all over the place and they go from week to week. None of it aligns. And for me, I have a philosophy with how I do things. So I'm always thinking about what I'm going to say, when I say it, how I break things down. And there's certain lines I won't cross. I'm not going to be the chatty patty. I'm not going to get into people's personal lives and things like that. So I have my stuff that I will talk about and stuff that I want. But other people don't have those same rules. And I noticed that you will see that their consistency is not there. You will see that they will. You almost can't tell what they believe in because they are all over the place with how they speak about things. And Coach Prime has noticed this too. And he's saying, who is going to pull the receipts? Who's going to pull the receipts? When these things are happening and nobody is here to, you know, come back and double check it. That's why sometimes it seems like I got a slow setup. Man, that just reminded me of something else I wanted to add. I had a receipt thing that I was putting together. I wasn't able to add it to my stream deck, but I'll get it added because I'm going to be one of those people that pulls receipts. Now, when you are new in this space and you're working to build up credibility, people just look at you and they look at you as a face, but they don't know if you're putting in the work. They don't know if you're watching the film. They don't know. So you got to do things to show them that you're credible. So my goal to show the viewer that I'm credible is through the work I'm putting in, through the knowledge, how I speak on things, and then also how I'm able to say things in real time and then months later, people get to where I was a couple months ago. So that's something that I'm always saying. So I know last week I was saying, hey, what's going on, Beast? Shout out to you for being here. So last week I was saying that I always enjoy when something I say months ago, people come back and say. So you can check out my YouTube page, check out my YouTube videos. You'll see I actually did have a video. Do you want to be first or do you want to be right? So it's just, this just sparked something. When you're doing something creative, like live streaming, and you want to bring information to people, there's going to be certain things that just kind of spark something in your mind and you're going to say, okay, let me go. And this was something, this Coach Prime clip was, it just sparked something in me. To switch it up, to make sure I was here, to get my recaps and kind of switch up that schedule. What's good, Beast? Not sure if you were here, Beast. I made an announcement to start the show. My live stream schedule is going to be changing some. I'm going to be going live on Mondays. So one day after we had the Browns game, everybody got to sleep on it. Going to be going live on Mondays. And then also going to be doing something like today, which is a midweek check-in, where we're going to be looking at some of the stats, because the stats come out a couple days after the game. And then also we're going to look ahead to the next week. So the new live stream schedule format is going to be Mondays live, Wednesdays live, Sundays live. So just to let you know, add an additional day to the live stream. Shout out to you for being here. Let's see. So this is, I believe Coach Prime is going to go into the quarterback situation. And it just shows how we look at Kevin Stefanski get up there every week and he's not giving us anything, and it's his message is already stale to the fans. And you can give more without throwing guys under the bus, because everybody just says, oh, he doesn't throw guys under the bus. Coach Prime doesn't throw guys under the bus. He critiques them, says they can get better, but he also gives you something. So I think that a lot of times people create their own problems with them trying to be coy, or them trying to protect something or not say something. They just talk in circles and get the same questions over and over again. So it's a little bit more
24/7 sports. We just had Simeon Price in here. He mentioned that he was in the portal for about 6 months and it was kind of in a dark place. What's it been like to see him get this opportunity and run with it?
First of all, he deserves it. Second of all, you talk about a great kid, a character kid, a kid that loves this game. Loves everything that comes with it, the education, academics, the leadership that we have in the building, not just the young man that he plays with, but the type of coaching staff that we have and support staff when it comes to academics and all. Phenomenal human being, man. I'm proud to have him a part of this team.
Hey, Coach. Pat Graham, Associate Press. How you doing? Hey, when you're making a decision on a quarterback, I know we talked about you're not naming a starter, but what factors do you go into it, and how much do you kind of factor in team what the team thinks and just not to make change for change's sake?
Oftentimes what the team thinks may not be correct. Oftentimes what the fans think, or the media. It's got to be what we as coaches have come to the conclusion what best fits us for where we're headed. That's how we kind of accumulate that decision and understand leadership is involved, understanding the totality of the offense is involved, and being able to do some things that are off script. When the play breaks down, just let, come on, man. What you got? What you got? You know, like, I feel like a quarterback has to make three plays on his own a game. Just three plays. You know, throwing the ball and we call that route is one thing, but you made that play out of nothing. That's something, and a quarterback has to make at least three plays a game for us to be successful.
So that right there is what I wanted to play. So he's not giving anything away. He's not throwing anybody under the bus, but he's describing what he believes a quarterback needs to do to help you win a game. And as I went back and I watched it all 22 and I watched the film, a lot of people are just giving Joe Flacco a pass and saying he did enough to win the game. And I noticed that in real time, the last drive where we got to the 13-yard line and then we couldn't move forward anymore and we end up kicking a field goal to end up missing wide right. To me, Joe Flacco had opportunities to make a play on that third down and he just gave up on the play. Now, I called it out in real time because he just turned around and started running backwards And it was just like, I'm like, what are you doing? If this would have been Shador, if this would have been Dylan Gabriel, we would have crushed him for it. When you got a field goal kicker that's shaky and you run back 5 yards, that's making it harder on that kicker. You know, if you don't know, if you feel like you just want to save the field goal, just drop to the ground right there. He stepped up in the pocket. He had room to the left to keep surveying the field. And instead of doing that, he went to the left and then turned around after going to the left and ran back. So that's a situation where I agree with Coach Prime. They can call up a play, but you got to make something happen in that situation. And he wasn't able to make something happen. So just, I got a lot of inspiration from watching this yesterday. And I was like, man, we're going to do some changes. We're going to make some changes based on this. So let's go to the next video. So that was Coach Prime. And now everybody said the Browns running game, they're going to be a running team. And to me, the running game was not working. They weren't getting guys in space, and some of the holes that the running backs decided to go to, they didn't pick the right holes. So it was just a combination of things where the running game is not where it should be. And that's something that should have been better because there hasn't been change up. You know, there wasn't a running back competition or anything like that. So that was a head scratcher. So I'm not the only one to notice John Greco used to be offensive lineman for the Browns. He noticed it. This is going to be him calling out what he needs to see in the running game. So let's go.
You mentioned something in there that I don't want to say it's concerning to me, but, you know, all of that is kind of window dressing. And when you're trying to manufacture runs by swing passes and you know, throwing these kind of extended handoffs because the run game.
I agree. Quinshon is going to be a beast. One thing about the way Kevin Stefanski calls the run game, it's always designed for you to have a cutback. And for some reason, Jerome Ford has never been able to make that cutback in a wide zone scheme. So it looks like it's going outside, but the way they block down, it's always an opportunity for a cutback. Nick Chubb used to hit that cutback like crazy. And I didn't see Samson do it in game one. I didn't see Jerome Ford doing it in game one. So hopefully that's something that Junkins can bring to the table, because that cutback being there, when Nick Chubb would take that cutback a couple times, you were holding off the backside so they're not just crashing down the line. So then when you decide to just follow the path of the run, everything you're doing is setting up that next play where you're making the defensive line think. So hopefully Junkins can bring that to the running game. But I wasn't the only one who had questions after watching the run game.
Isn't going anywhere. You know, that's a little bit concerning. And, hey, look, you got to do what you got to do. The Browns were in this game and in a position to where they could have won the game. And then we could have dissected, hey, they won. They're 1-0. But, you know, why couldn't they run the ball a little bit more effectively? And then we can get into that. I'm sure, you know, Kevin and the offensive coaches, there's a million plays on that Denny's Wendy menu card. And, you know, they kind of – you know, green check mark some of the plays throughout the week, you know, as the guys execute them at practice. And then they say, you know, this just doesn't make sense this week against whatever defense the opponent's, you know, running, or, you know, what they have success against, you know, opposing offenses. But yeah, you know, they were in a position where they had to try to manufacture yards some way, somehow. And that's what they had to resort to. But, you know, moving guys around, I think that they're still, you know, in kind of the infant.
All right. I didn't realize how slow his answer was, but it's going to take him a while to get there. But basically what he's saying is he needs to see more from the offensive lineman in the run game, which I want to see more too. One thing I notice is, so as I'm watching all the film, I'm watching Clemson and I'm watching LSU. Who else is, I noticed I like their run game? Miami. So I noticed that we ran a ton of motion this week, which is fine to help Joe Flacco identify what the defense is doing. You get them to show their hand. Basically, if they're a man or zone, you get, you know, they got to respond to what you're doing. So I like it. Another thing I want to see is I want to see what we build off of running guys in motion. So I saw this play, I believe it was in Miami game, when I was watching Carson Beck, because I watch all the offensive snaps. So they're running the motion like we always do, but they added the motion from a receiver and uses him as the lead blocker on similar plays that the Browns ran. And I thought that the running game in college is a lot more creative. And I was thinking, Kevin Stefanski needs to get a little bit more creative with, you're using the motion, but what are you using it to set up? Are you only using it to set up the pass, or are you using it to set up the run as well? That was one of the things that Sean McVay really did well back when he had Robert Woods. So he would always run motion, and he would use his receivers as lead blockers. His run and pass plays will look exactly the same. And that's how you take advantage of it. So if you're only using motion and then you're always throwing the ball, it only helps you in those throwing situations. But if you're using motion on run and pass, then it helps you out because now you can use that guy that's moving and not just for jet sweeps and stuff like that. So you can use him as a blocker. You can use him as someone who can help chip to get the edge because you want to get Dylan Sampson to the outside. So I want to see more creativity. I want to see the run game get better this week. I want to see a way better showing from the run game. We're going to need to do that against Baltimore because Baltimore is going to run the ball. Cincinnati did not stick to running the ball, and that's kind of something that threw their offense off. Let's get to the next one. This is going to be Lance Riesling, and he's going to speak about the running game as well. So everybody's seeing this with the run game.
Coach.
Well, part of his success with his size is that obviously his length helps him in pass protection. But in the run game, DeJuan Jones has never been a killer. He's not a mauler. He's not a vertical displaced guy. He's a position guy. And he's going to have to learn to do some things differently because he's not as big. And it sounds kind of weird, but when you lose that weight, you know, being in position doesn't always help you. He's going to have to learn some new things in the pass protection, too, because a lot of times he'll get out there and just kind of get in the way, which he can do. Orlando Brown can do. These guys who are massive can do that. So he's going to have to learn, continue to get better. He's going to have to get a little bit meaner in the run game, especially with these double teams they're going to. And he's going to have to, really attack those defensive ends, especially on that wide zone. He struggled a little bit with that on Sunday.
So one of the big things that people have paid attention to is the Browns, who over the last couple previous years have not used hardly any motion. The Browns used a butt ton of motion on Sunday.
What's up, Brent? Shout out to you for being here. I agree. His that's funny. As I read it, I thought about even me about to say it. DeJuan Jones has long arms, so the length is there. It's definitely him being slimmer. He's going to have to get used to how he's going to have to play that style of play. But that's what she said, Brent. It just shows you that a lot of people, they want to see something different when it comes to the run game. They want to see more. If we're going to be this team that runs the ball to use that as time of possession, we got to see more from the run game. Getting right around 50 yards rushing is nothing. Averaging 2 point something yards a carry is nothing. We want to be in that 3.5 yards of rush. That's where we want to be. Not in that 2 point anything when it comes to running the ball, especially for a team that is going back to more running. So that's not what we want to see. That's there. Now, some people that are new to me, I was saying this. Aditi was saying, she heard people say that Kenny Pickett is better than Joe Flacco. And my angle or my view or my stance I took on it was, I want to hear how people really feel. And I want to just know that if you think Kenny Pickett was the best quarterback on the Browns, I want to know that. If you feel like he's the worst quarterback on the Browns, I want to know that. I want to know where you stand on these situations. So, because then I can know how to view you based on how you view quarterbacks. Now, a couple weeks ago, Aditi was saying that she knows people that say Kenny Pickett is better than Joe Flacco. Now, in this clip here, she's going to explain how Joe Flacco could potentially be a Super Bowl quarterback with the Browns if he just got help. So, I guess that means Kenny Pickett could also be a Super Bowl quarterback. So we're going to see. So let's get to Aditi. This was yesterday.
Flacco to me, Aditi, love him.
I thought, and I know he played fine, but I actually thought he looked old. He looked really old to me, and I just don't see how he can hold up all that long, especially with some of the defenses you got coming in here or coming to face the Browns, Baltimore and Green Bay. And I don't know. How long do you think he can hold up at 40 years old?
I mean, I hope the whole season. This all goes back to the whole conversation where I wouldn't have traded Kenny Pickett, because I would have felt better with Kenny Pickett as my number two than I do Dylan Gabriel, simply on the face of experience, snaps, time on task, and
but you drafted two guys, and they got to play, don't they?
I mean, do they have to? Patrick Mahomes didn't play until the very end.
Yeah, but that's a different story. They had committed to Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback of the future. So the Browns might, if they don't play these guys and they end up with the first pick in the draft and there's a better quarterback, these guys will have never gotten an opportunity. And maybe one of them's good.
Then fine. Then they go someplace else. Yeah, but you know what? Here's the fallacy.
So we gotta break this down some. So everybody uses that example of Patrick Mahomes or guys who've waited. They use the example of Aaron Rodgers. So, oh man, that's a reason to not rush the guys out there. That's fine. But you knew they were the guy going forward, like Bill just said. It wasn't because then she stopped just short of saying that these would be wasted draft picks then. If you knew that you had no intentions on playing these guys before you pick another quarterback, these are wasted draft picks. So this is the conundrum. Because then you got to call out Andrew Berry for picking guys that he was never going to play. Because then why are you picking him? So she stopped short of saying it right there. Bull's about to say something about it. Do they have to play? Well, if they don't have to play, why did you select them? The 94th pick in the draft, you can still get a game changer. You can get a guy who could do things. So, yes, they should have to play. So people are in this weird conundrum. I always tell you, watch who they protect and watch who they decide to defend. So we heard Dylan Gabriel was good enough if he had to go in the game. We heard that before week one. Now, after week one, we're hearing Dylan Gabriel doesn't have to play. We got a weird article about Shador probably won't see the field all year. And Joe Flacco can play the whole season. See, reporters are saying this. I see it differently. Kevin Stefanski was visibly frustrated. I agree with that. I agree. I think Pickett should have never even been here. So I think it was good they got a draft pick for him, but I think that it was things that they could have done better to set guys up. And this is where you end up in these losing situations, because how do you draft somebody? You say you like them so much enough to draft them, but then say they don't have to play. And then you use the example of them getting a later opportunity to play. But then also she's saying they could go somewhere else and play. So that none of that makes sense. Where is the plan? Where is we're drafting guys to develop them and then eventually they'll get to play? Or did you draft guys because you had to make a pick and then you're just going to, you know, shun them after the year? It's not making sense. It's not making sense. So people during the preseason, during training camp, during the offseason program, they have a plan. They have a plan. What we are realizing is they don't have a plan, because if we go based on the breadcrumbs they're feeding to the media, nobody can tell me what the plan is. In the summer, the plan was we're going to develop these guys and let them get better and give them opportunity to play. Now we're hearing breadcrumbs of Flacco might play all year and they don't have to play at all. Those two things don't match. And then she even went a step further and said they can go play somewhere else. So then you drafted him for no reason. So I'm not seeing the plan here. It's just more questions than answers. That's why I started with the Coach Prime clip, because with Coach Prime and speaking is clear. Yeah, she's all over the place. She was yelling about Kenny Pickett being better than Flacco. You know what happens when you've never played a sport, you've never been on a team, you've never been in leadership positions outside of your home. It's hard for them to think about everybody and how it looks on everybody. So saying, oh, Joe Flacco can play all 17 games. If the Browns end up, which I'm not saying I want this to happen, but if the Browns end up at 0-5 and you just keep running Joe Flacco out there, you're going to lose the whole team. So that's the thing that people who haven't played or haven't been leaders of people, they don't realize that morale is a thing. The locker room morale is a thing. Why is there a term losing the locker room? How do you lose the locker room? You lose the locker room by sending guys out there who aren't performing and you keep giving them opportunities. So it's just people who haven't played, they don't understand that there are decisions you can make that can make things go bad, and people are not giving their all. So it's going to get more. It's more to this.
In that, Adam, yeah. If one of them was that lights out good, if one of them was truly the future of the franchise, you'd be seeing them.
Well,
it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time before Jackson Dart is starting in New York. I don't know that any of us are sitting here and saying it's only a matter of time this season before Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders is starting for.
Dylan Gabriel is second string on the depth chart. Saying you don't know if it's only a matter of time before he plays is crazy. Joe Flacco is one hit away from Dylan Gabriel being a starter. What do you mean that? Oh, nobody, that's how they have aligned this. That's how they have set this up. So this is where I say, like, they start the fumbling. When you on script and you're having a conversation with them or you're asking them questions, they can go down that script. As soon as you ask that next question, they start scrambling and fumbling. Oh man, we're going to see Jackson Dart. Okay. So we're going to see Jackson Dart because they decided he's going to be the future. They made a decision early that we're going to pour into him, and when he's ready, we're going to let him play. Supposedly, the Browns did that with Dylan Gabriel, but now the Browns media is backtracking on that with Dylan Gabriel even being ready, even though Dylan Gabriel got the bulk of the reps the entire offseason program and all training camp. The plan ain't there. The plan ain't there.
For this team, neither of them had a camp like Jackson Dart did.
I know, but it's also because Jackson Dart was a first-round pick, and those guys were not. I would just
exactly.
rather.
So then again, why wouldn't you want it?
The Browns can't win anything.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm sorry. I mean, like, the Browns, they're not going to win anything. Why would you not want to see what these guys got?
How are you saying that week one?
Because I live in reality. You can't win without a quarterback in the NFL.
Adam, give some credit to the Browns defense.
I gave a ton. All I've been doing is giving credit to the Browns defense. It played great.
And T. Higgins. Look, give some credit to the Browns defense and what they did to that Bengals offense. It's not only about the Bengals starting slow on offense. That Browns defense played really well. My expectations for that Browns defense are literally through the roof. I've said from the beginning, my question has been at corner and solving that situation, but the Browns defense looked really good to me. I don't know why you'd be giving up on this season after week one.
Because
I don't know why you're sitting here and saying, okay, I mean, did you see the Steelers defense? Because they...
Hey, Ms. Brown, how you doing today? Welcome in.
Looked awful.
The Steelers can't win the Super Bowl either. You can't win a Super Bowl without a good quarterback. We know this.
Okay, so you start the conversation by saying that the Browns receivers didn't do any favors to Joe
Flacco. I didn't say that.
There was
no
run game.
Yeah.
The panel. Look, the Browns receivers didn't do any favors to Joe Flacco. There was no run game to speak of, and the line wasn't quite as good as we expected it to be. So why are you sitting here and saying it's only on Joe Flacco? Joe Flacco is still throwing that he can
throw. He's
still showing that he can throw the ball and that he can place the ball accurately, and he's still got a lot of juice on that ball. So it sort of feels to me like you're just trying to find little scapegoats as opposed to, wait a minute, the game of football is about a bunch of puzzle pieces that fit together. It's not only on Joe Flacco here.
I know that. I'm not blaming Joe Flacco at all. I blame him 0% for the Browns losing this game. I'm just saying, I'm living in reality. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco as quarterback. You can't do that. It's not realistic at this point.
All right, I'm not. You know what? I don't feel that way right now.
You think they can win a Super Bowl?
You know, I think if he can get some help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Brent, I agree with you. Nails on the chalkboard. I struggled through that because I wanted y'all to hear what she said. So, Ms. Brown, you got it. She was taking up for Kenny and see what he's at. So I don't believe anything she say. I wanted y'all to hear that. I just was saying that before I played this clip. I played the clips before where she's saying Kenny Pickett is better than Joe Flacco. Now she's saying you can win a Super Bowl. The Browns team with Joe Flacco can win a Super Bowl. That's gonna be a no. That's going to be a no. I rewatched the All 22, and at first I was giving Joe Flacco a pass on the interception that he threw to that was for Jerry Jeudy. When I went back and watched All 22, Joe Flacco was late on his throw. Jerry Jeudy sat down in the zone. He sat in the zone coverage. The guys weren't close enough around him. Joe Flacco threw the ball 3 or 4 yards away from Jerry Jeudy. That's why he had to dive and try to catch it. Yeah, she all over the place. She's all over the place. So I just wanted y'all to hear her say Joe Flacco can win the Super Bowl with the Browns this year. So I'm a diehard Browns fan, been a Browns fan my entire life. I don't believe the Browns, this team, can win the Super Bowl. This team, we're going to see this week. This team cannot score enough points to compete with the Baltimore Ravens, the Buffalo Bills, just in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs. We can't score enough points. Last year, we scored 15 points a game. We start this year off scoring 16 points. 16 points is not going to win you a Super Bowl. It's going to be a time where your defense is not excellent and you need to have your defenses back. Brent, you were here. I kept saying the offense needed to pay the defense back for what they were doing. It's going to be times where you're going to have to put up 30 points. I don't see this offense being able to put up 30 points. So what she's saying just is all over the place. It doesn't make sense. She is just jumping and dancing around. She's jumping and dancing around. And this goes back to my thought that I had when I was listening to Coach Prime. Who is going to be the one that pulls out the receipts when these people get it wrong? So if the Browns go out and lose this week, if Joe Flacco's not even a starter by week 8, who's going to be the one that says, she was saying they can win the Super Bowl with Joe Flacco. I'm going to be the one. A lot of my channel is me giving analysis real time and then also seeing other people's analysis and breaking it down and saying, man, that's way off. So her, we all struggle through that together. We struggled through that together, listening to her for all that time. And people were saying that in the chat when I was listening to that, people were saying that all Bull was kind of off and she was right. And I was like, man, there's no way you can see that she's right. She's all over the place. She was putting words in his mouth that he didn't say and then blaming the whole panel, saying, oh, you said this about Joe Flacco, which he never said. Oh, you said this about, he wasn't saying those things. So when a person gets to that point, they can't even identify if you said it or if somebody else said it. That's just emotions taking over and they just going. So she just be saying stuff. It's getting exposed to her just saying stuff. And yeah, the Steelers put up 34 points. You know, so they put, the Steelers put up 34 points. The Baltimore Ravens put up what, 40 points. So teams are putting up way more points than the Browns. And I don't see the Browns. This Browns team can't get in the shootout like Baker and Jared Goff, when I think we scored 54, or we ended up losing like something crazy, like 48 to 50, something like that when we had Baker. This team can't put up that many points. This team is not designed to put up points like that. So that's just, she's going to be wrong there. She's just way wrong. So I looked at Joe Flacco. I watched the All 22, and on Monday, Bull was right. Bull said, you know what? Joe Flacco's accuracy wasn't there. She said Joe Flacco's accurate. You go back and watch it. Joe Flacco's, he was not that accurate. The placement of his passes was not good. And we can say, oh yeah, Tillman dropped a pass that tossed up for an interception. Okay. Jerry Jeudy did drop that 4th and 5 pass that he was accurate. He got it. He got it on the numbers. Jerry Jeudy had to catch that. The pass he threw, I believe on 3rd and 5 to Harold Fannin Jr. was not accurate. I think Joe Flacco is trying to limit turnovers and throwing all his passes low if he thinks that the Bengals have an opportunity to catch it. She was crying. crying about Kenny that he didn't have a chance and he's a good quarterback. I remember that. You were right, Ms. Brown. You were right. See, I want people to tell me who they like, so then I know what category I can put you in. So if Aditi ever tries to tell me who a good quarterback is, I just know I'm going to disregard that because she believes in Kenny Pickett. So that I don't mind if we don't agree. Just put out there who you believe in, and then we'll go from there. Shout out to you. What's up, Jeffrey? Shout out to you. The only way we're going to win games is because of our defense, and we had the Bengals to 7 yards in the second half. That is correct. Another person who's getting a pass in this whole situation is Kevin Stefanski. I know a lot of people think that it's just piling on Kevin Stefanski, but Kevin Stefanski is the offensive play caller. We have an offensive coordinator, but Kevin Stefanski calls the plays. So Kevin Stefanski is known for a great first 15 that scripted plays. Once we get out of that, Kevin Stefanski's offense is not as good after it's out of the scripted plays. And to me, it was our second, I think it was our second to last drive in the fourth quarter when we missed the field goal. Kevin Stefanski went super safe. He went super safe. We ran a play to the left to Dylan Sampson, didn't get anywhere. Then we ran a tight end screen out of 12 personnel. Now, the reason why I don't like the tight end screen out of 12 personnel is because they're going to keep their linebackers in when you're in 12 personnel because you got the potential to run. So you don't have the advantage when they have more linebackers when you run a tight end screen because they got guys ready to tackle. You run the tight end screen with one tight end on the field and they have another, they're a nickel defense. Then you have the advantage because your big guys are hitting smaller DBs. And so I didn't like that play call. Then on third down, Joe Flacco catches a snap. He steps up in the pocket and turns around and is running away from the line when all he had to do was step up, go to his left, keep looking upfield. So, Jeffrey, explain to me what you like about Kevin. This is how I feel. I don't think Kevin's a bad person. I think he's a likable guy. Zedrick McBride. They seem to be shifting the narrative. DG doesn't seem as far ahead as they were saying. I agree with you, my friend. That's all you got to do is just listen. The Browns are kind of sprinkling these things out there. Now that it's live and he would have to face a live defense, everybody's pulling back on the Dylan Gabriel situation. So, hey, they're showing their hand. They're showing their hand. They don't want if Dylan Gabriel had to get ready for this Ravens game, they don't believe in him. When I say likable, I don't mean like I personally like him. I mean like the media likes him. The media likes Kevin Stefanski. So that's why he won Coach of the Year twice. That second Coach of the Year Kevin Stefanski won, it actually should have went to D'Amico Ryans, who was a rookie head coach with a rookie quarterback. He led them to the playoffs, and they won their division. That he should have won Coach of the Year when they gave it to Kevin Stefanski that second one. So I think the media likes him. To me, Kevin Stefanski's message has gotten stale when it comes to the media, when he's speaking locally. He doesn't stand on anything. He just plays the middle when he's speaking, answering questions. And I think you could do that if you're Bill Belichick and you got rings. I don't think that works when you're not winning. Look at how they are killing Bill Belichick for what he's doing in Carolina because they're not dominating. So that you can only take that approach when you're winning. When you're not winning, nobody wants to hear about, you know, next question on to the Ravens. Nobody want to hear that. I agree. Ms. Brown, he's super vague, and you can give something without throwing guys under the bus. You can give something. So he doesn't really do that at that much. So my knock on Kevin Stefanski is whenever he has a top wide receiver, it's hard for him to get the ball. Jeffrey, I agree a lot of what you're saying there. Kevin does a good job of getting people open in the middle of the field. He also does a good job making mismatches. I agree. Actually, I agree with both of those. I'm not even going to disagree with those. I agree with both of those. And that's why I questioned the play call to run that tight end screen because we didn't have the advantage on running that style of play at that moment. But that's just me being critical of him. But he does have a way of getting people open in the middle of the field. It's funny you say that. Let me get to something. Let me show you something. So I got Next Gen Stats pulled up here. And this is one of the pluses of doing a Wednesday show. So show passing performance. So Jeffrey, what you just called out is 100% true. Do you think they're going, I think DG is going to play for sure. Yeah, I think he's going to play. So this is next gen stats. This is a passing chart, next gen stats. This is all of Joe Flacco's throws. So where it's the darker peach color, that's where he did the best. So Joe Flacco did the most in the middle of the field. So Jeffrey, you're 100% correct on that. So in short yardage plays, he was 3 for 4 for 19 yards. Medium yardage up to 10 yards, he was 8 for 9, 81 yards. And then he had his touchdown from 10 to 20 yards. He was 4 for 6, 61 yards. So you were right there. But he needs to modernize his playbook. That's the biggest knock on Kev. I totally agree. He definitely needs to modernize his playbook. His running game, I don't think our offensive line is physically capable of running the style of the running game that we used to run. So he needs to adjust that, because these guys are 3 years older than when we had a lot of success running the ball. The last 2 years, we haven't really had success running the ball. So, you know, these guys are older. So I agree with your take there. Another knock I have on Kevin is he gets conservative. He gets too conservative, like he has the game in the pocket. And that's not just this game. It came into play this game. But a lot of times in the past, he has went super conservative, and he's, you know, tried to hold on to, we got this game on lock, and let me just try to burn the clock, and it's came back in and it's burned us. So he's done that multiple times, and that's another knock I have on him, where just trying to hold on to the ball and burn the clock didn't work. So let's look at rushing yards. So I totally agree. We need runs to the outside. This is Dylan Sampson. So this is next gen stats. This is where he was able to get yards. So when we were running, we did one run to the left. We got 3 yards. 4 attempts to the right, the guard inside guard spot, inside right. We got 4 attempts for 11 yards. To the outside, so wide right, we got 4 attempts for 15 yards. So we had the most success running wide right. So some things I liked about what Kevin called. In the first half of the game, he ran like, it was almost like a pseudo screen that he ran, where he got Lucas out to the right and threw to Sampson, which was good. And then also he ran a similar play with a toss to the right to Sampson that I thought was good. But definitely, you got speed, you got to get more outside. When Joe started getting sacked and it's over, he's going to be shocked. I agree. He panicked a lot. So on that last drive where I was saying that Stefanski got conservative, he wouldn't allow Joe to push the ball downfield, he panicked. He panicked and turned around. All right, my bot got you, but let's read this, Jeffrey. But I think Joe Flacco talked to Kevin to open up a playbook a little bit more, because Joe Flacco threw 2 picks that wasn't on him, and I think that's not going to happen again. It'll be on my terms. I agree to a degree. Like, Jeffrey, I'm not sure if you're here. I was saying this earlier. I went back and watched the All-22. The Cedric Tillman pick, I don't put on Joe Flacco because he was protecting Cedric Tillman, so he was throwing it low for a reason. The pick that he threw to Jerry Jeudy, I'll put that more on Joe Flacco after watching the All-22, because Joe Flacco, he had him open, and he made him dive out of his spot to get to the ball. Let me see something. Let's do this. I know that sometimes people show the All-22. He was running in slow motion. He was running in slow motion when he scrambled out to the left. If with Dylan Gabriel, that would have been 7 or 8 yards. Shador, that would have been 7, 8 yards. Flacco, it was 3 yards when he scrambled out to the left. Let me do something real quick. I'm going to see if I can show y'all that one play. The one play where he threw the interception to Dylan Gabriel. Now, I know I can't show a lot of stuff. I can't store a lot of stuff with NFL on live. But let me see if I can show y'all this one play. Let me try to find it here. And I'm going to show y'all the back angle, the All-22 angle of when Joe Flacco threw that interception. Because then you'll see. I think it was something that. Hold on. I'm not saying it was a catch that he couldn't catch, but I think the. I think the pass was off target. Let me see. Let's get to this. I think more and more as I went back and watched it that the pass was off target and he had to dive from where he was and he didn't need to do that. All right, it's not letting me pick the plays, but that's okay. We're going to do this thing on the fly. We're going to get to actually NFL Pro should show it better. So he made Jerry Jeudy dive like 3 yards away from where he was. And I think that was the issue that I had where he made it way harder than it had to be. Jerry Jeudy, I agree with you, Jeffrey. I don't know why Jerry Jeudy likes to catch the ball like that, but he does. He lets the ball get so close to his body. I think that's kind of why he runs into issues, but let's see. Okay. Oh, we got the game here. Now, I'm not going to show a bunch of plays. I am going to go to the one play. Box score, stats, pro preview. Let's go to pro preview. But I do want to show y'all the one play that I'm talking about. But I wish Joe Flacco was 34 because him and Kevin want the same things out of offense to have similar minds. Yeah, I think Joe Flacco thrives in what Kevin wants to do. So I don't think that's the issue. I think he's just, we're getting the oldest version of this Joe Flacco. So, all right, we're going to take it. Yeah, I want end zone. Let's go to third quarter. And I appreciate y'all patience while I'm pulling this up for y'all. I just want to find that pass where it was actually an interception. So, our regular season tie. Let's filter this down. Play result. Interception. Apply filters. All right, so I think I have it here. So let me get this back up to show y'all. And I'm not going to show a ton. I'm just going to show this one play. All right, so we got it up, so y'all should be able to see it. So I believe this is the play. Let's play it. So when you look at it, let's rewind it. Or actually, let's play it through. I wonder if they're going to show it again. So this play, he's off. He's off on this play. So let's play it back through, and I'm going to pause it to show you where Jerry Jeudy sits in the zone. This is where Jerry Jeudy is going to sit in the zone. So look where Jerry Jeudy is. Oh, man, y'all can't see it. Let me scroll down just a little bit more. Dang. So how can I get this so y'all can see it? I want y'all to be able to see it. On y'all's side, y'all can't even see Jerry Jeudy on the screen. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do it live. Let's widen this thing up some so y'all can see Jerry Jeudy, where he's at on the screen, and how Joe Flacco throws this. Slide this over. So y'all see Jerry Jeudy, he's at the bottom left of the screen. Jerry Judy's at the bottom left of the screen, and this is why I say Joe Flacco was off. He was off on this throw. Now we see where he is, and we see where the stripes are going down the field. Flacco is going to throw this ball closer to the stripes. There we go. That's better. So y'all see Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy is at the bottom left of the screen. This is the interception he threw to Jerry Jeudy. Look what Jerry Jeudy has to do. Jerry Jeudy has to dive all the way over to try to catch that pass. That's off target. And that's on Flacco. I know the result, and everybody says, oh, this on Judy. Judy got to catch that. That's a tough throw, and Joe Flacco makes it harder on him by where he placed the ball. That's the result of it. Once it finishes, I'm going to play it one more time straight through so y'all can just see the play and see that Joe Flacco was off on this. This is it straight through. Jerry Judy sitting in the zone. He throws off target. So after I watched all 22, I was like, man, that is more on Joe Flacco than I actually thought. That's more on Joe Flacco. So I'm not giving Joe Flacco a pass on both of the interceptions. I understand that the one interception for Cedric Tillman wasn't good, but this one I'm putting more on Joe Flacco because Jerry Judy sat there, he showed his numbers, and Flacco threw that way too far inside. I agree, but this is what I'm saying. I'm not saying Jerry Judy can't make the catch. I'm saying Flacco put the ball in a bad location. That's what I'm saying. So during the game, when I saw it live, I was like, that is 70% on Jerry Judy and 30% on Flacco, or 75-25. I said one of those. After I went back and watched all 22, I'm saying I'm putting more of that on Flacco. So I'm saying it's 50-50. It's 50% on Judy because that's a catch he can make, and 50% on Joe Flacco because he just threw the ball. It was just – he didn't have to make that hard. That's a throw that you just throw it low to where Judy's at. And he just dropped down to catch it. But throwing it low and throwing it that far inside where he got to try to make a diving catch when he sat down in the zone, I think that's more 50-50 on both of them. So I put it way more on Judy before. Now I'm putting it 50-50 on both of them. So I'm not saying it's not a catch he can't make. Joe Flacco made that harder. Oh, man, my bot is tripping on you, Jeffrey. Let me get this back. Okay, yeah, I saw that last one you sent. Yeah, my bot was tripping there. But that's all I'm saying. You know, just I'm saying that 50-50 thing. So once I look back, I look at that play differently now. So this is some of the things that when I'm watching all this film and I'm watching all this stuff, I'm looking like, man, this is more on this leads to more of Joe Flacco not being as accurate as I thought he was initially. So that just shows some of the accuracy there. I got the next video. The next video I got for y'all is kind of funny to me. Let me lock this, set you, bring you up. So no more Aditi. Ms. Brown says Joe is not accurate. He wasn't as accurate as you would like. He definitely was not as accurate as you would like in this game. Now, this is everybody's favorite. It's funny. I call Mary Kay and I call Tony Grossi everybody's favorite because basically nobody likes them. But Mary Kay is going to say something. So in the thick of things, when we're having this quarterback competition, she's writing about it every day. She's never questioning if it was going to mess up the timing of the offense and the camaraderie. Jeffrey, I don't know what we have to see that would say he's more ready than Shador besides going on their word. And to me, they haven't built up the grace where we should take their word for it. Because these are the same people who want us to believe that Schmidt was the best option at kicker, and then he got in and missed kicks. So are we going to pick and choose when we take their word for what they're saying on evaluating talent and then not use it other times? So I just don't think that I don't trust them. I don't trust them in their talent evaluation because I had to watch them put. I won't even argue the process. If you want to say he processes better, I'll give it to you. I won't even argue that. I won't argue that. I would say that Dylan definitely struggles in the red zone because he's shorter. And Joe, I don't know what happened in the red zone, but he had the good anticipation to Cedric Tillman, but you got to get points. You got to score more points. And it's not looking like we're going to be able to put up a lot of points just initially, especially going against one of the worst defenses in the league. I'm going to tell you all my knocks on Dylan. These are my knocks on Dylan from the time we drafted him before we get to what Mary Kay says. My knocks on Dylan were, when I watched all the film I can find on him from college, it was a highlight tape for his offensive line, tight end, and receivers. That's what I saw. I never saw those moments. Like, if you were here early, Coach Prime said, your quarterback has to do three things where he got to make something out of nothing, and that helps you win a game. I didn't see any of those things with Dylan. I saw Dylan playing in the offense, and that's what I saw from him. I didn't see him. I saw him throwing to Tez Johnson and him making crazy plays. I saw him dropping back, having all the time he need without the pressure on him to throw the ball. That's what I saw from Dylan in college. So my knock on him is the Browns need a quarterback. Y'all see it. The Browns need a quarterback who can make something happen out of nothing, and it's not just about Kevin Stefanski scheming things up, because when Kevin Stefanski schemes it up, but the offensive line don't block long enough, you need a guy who can make something happen. You need a guy who can make something happen. So I can he play in structure? Sure. But once they get enough film on him, see, I don't know if he could be Brock Purdy. I think he could be more Tua. I think he could have a couple great years, but I think once they get some, I don't know about great. I would say he can have a couple good years. Tua has some great years, but I would say Dylan can have some good years. Once they get tape on him, crack the code, you got to blow the team up. And if that's going to be the thing, I don't even see you going down that path. Look at Tua. Look how bad Tua looked. Everybody thought Brian Flores was crazy because he didn't believe in Tua. Now Mike McDaniels might lose his job because he believed in Tua. So when you make these decisions, and it don't matter what I think about Dylan Gabriel. Kevin Stefanski wanted Dylan Gabriel, put Dylan Gabriel out there. But you got to live with the person that you hitched your wagon to. So, Kevin, you hitch your wagon to Dylan, go out there, hitch your wagon. Let's see what he got. I'm not rooting against him. I just don't think he's a game changer. Now, game manager, I think he could do that. The difference is, for him to be Brock Purdy, he would need to go to some NFC Championship games. He would need to go to, you know, the Super Bowl. Brock Purdy had an amazing team around him. Brock Purdy doesn't look the same without all those great weapons around him. The Browns don't have those weapons, so that's another reason why I'm not expecting that much from Dylan Gabriel. It's something else I want to show y'all from Let me find it here. From the game, and this goes right into what you're saying about Dylan Gabriel, and I'm saying Dylan Gabriel needs the perfect situation and weapons around him. Let's go back to Next Gen Stats. Let me get this switched over. How much separation do you think our receivers and tight ends and stuff made in this game? I think Mike McDaniels is way more creative than Kevin Stefanski. So if Mike McDaniels can't squeeze anything else out of Tua, I don't think Kevin's going to magically be able to get more out of Tua than Mike McDaniels. Tua had, 4,800 passing yards a couple seasons ago? Kevin hasn't got anybody to 4,000 since he's been in Cleveland. So, I mean, Mike McDaniels, I think offensively what he got out of Tua, I think he maxed out Tua. I don't think it's more you can get out of him. Okay, so this is receiver separation. Let's get it up on the chart. This is Next Gen Stats. This is receiver separation. So, this is average yards of separation that they were able to get. It's going to tell us the league average of separation that receivers have been able to get is 2.98 yards. Isaiah Bond was able, he wasn't in a bunch of snaps. He was able to get 5.3 yards. Jerry Jeudy got less than the league average at 2.78. Harold Fannin, matchup issues, he was able to get 3.11. David Njoku, they're keying in on him more, put in the safety on him instead of a linebacker. He was able to get 2.8, and Cedric Tillman was able to get 2.59. So when you see that they couldn't get separation and you see by the numbers they couldn't get separation, I think that would make it harder on Dylan Gabriel. I think that would make it harder on him. I think that made it hard on Joe. I think you need pinpoint accuracy when you're working with less separation. And that's just not – everybody says Joe has a strong arm, but you don't hear them say he has an accurate arm. So the separation wasn't there. Separation wasn't there at all. So that's the Kevin Stefanski thing. You know, you got to be able to manufacture separation. All right, let's read what Jeffrey has to say. Actually, man, my bot got you, but that's okay. That leads me into the draft. The draft, I'll use a first-round pick on an offensive lineman, another on a receiver. Hold off on 2027 to take a quarterback. It's way too early for me to call this. This is what I would say. I like your approach. I like what you're doing. It depends on where you end up at. Number one overall, I'm not going to say the name. Is one quarterback. So me looking at these quarterbacks is one quarterback. If we ended up with the number one overall pick, I would take. If you don't end up with the number one overall pick, then I would do what you're saying. I would take a lineman. I don't know if I would take a receiver that high with our Jacksonville pick or whatever one is. I would take the number one offensive lineman I can get. And if Caleb Downs is still on the board, I'm taking Caleb Downs. He's one of the best players in college football. So I semi agree with you, but I like your plan. Your plan is to upgrade at two positions where we are definitely to the lower level of talent. I'll bring back Joe Flacco. The Packers do it every time, build around a veteran and then put the rookie in there. If they're telling us that these guys are developmental and they sit on the bench for an entire year and then they're not ready, then that means you're not good at development. So by next year, one of these guys has to be ready to play. Have to be ready to play. The way the Packers did it was the Packers had guys still at the top of their game when they had guys sit for 2 years. Jordan Love sat for 2 years when Aaron Rodgers was way better than what Aaron Rodgers is now. So Jordan Love sat for 2 years. But the plan shouldn't be to sit guys for 2 years without a top-tier veteran quarterback. Joe Flacco is not a top-tier veteran quarterback. If we had a Matthew Stafford, maybe I'll roll with your plan. Not with Joe Flacco. With Joe Flacco, who most people say won't even make it through a year, these guys got to be ready if they sit a whole year. They got to be ready by next year. By next year, then I got to knock your development. Let's get to everybody's favorite, Mary Kay. That was good you brought up the separation because that was something I wanted to get on. I wanted to talk about the separation. But this is something I called months ago. Now Mary Kay said it.
Concerned. I thought Joe did his part. I think he's surrounded by a lot of young players. I think it's a new offense. And I think he doesn't necessarily have all the chemistry that he's going to have.
Mary Kay, when you was reporting and you were so hyped that they were doing the quarterback competition and all this stuff, now you're talking about camaraderie. And Beast, you're right. Cleveland Browns go through a lot of quarterbacks. Since Kevin Stefanski has been here, on average, we play about 3 to 4 quarterbacks a year. Mary Kay, you was hyping up this quarterback competition. I called it early. I said, if Flacco's a starter, name him starter so he can get that camaraderie down. I said this months ago. What I'm realizing is reporters are not doing analysis in the summer. They're reporting, so they like the stories. They get the clicks. And then when it comes to football, they hear somebody else say it, they repeat it. Now they're saying, man, the camaraderie's not there. You think? They need all the snaps. When they played Philadelphia, or not Philadelphia, when they did the joint camp with Philadelphia, they said Jalen Hurts got 90% of the snaps. Joe Flacco, if he was going to be a starter, he should have been getting 90% of the snaps. That fake quarterback competition they put on was a waste. It didn't result in us getting better in any way. Now this regular season start and they talk about building camaraderie. I don't think we had a QB competition. I don't think we had one. I think they wanted to anoint Kenny Pickett. He got hurt. It didn't work. They handed it to Joe Flacco because Dylan Gabriel, even though he took the bulk of the snaps, he couldn't win. He couldn't beat out Kenny Pickett, who was injured, and he couldn't beat out Flacco. So I don't think it was a true competition because in true competitions, you go down to New Orleans. They had a true competition. Spencer Rattler and Tyler Shuck both got times with the ones. Their snaps were very similar, so they could see how both of them did. I don't think this was a quarterback competition. I think the Browns had penciled in Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, Shador, we're going to bury him. I think that's what they penciled in. And I think it took a turn when Kenny Pickett got hurt. And then they just went to Flacco. Then they went to Dylan Gabriel and Shador get in whenever. Another thing Jeffrey said, I don't know why we haven't been brought in Nelson Aguilar. when the Browns don't bring in veterans, it shows you that they're not really trying to win. So I knock Andrew Berry for that. I don't think it was between Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco because Kenny Pickett never was able to get any snaps. They only gave him 707s. He never was able to get in the game. So at that point, it ended the competition, which I said this before training camp started, that I didn't think the competition was smart. I like how in New York, they just went out and said that Russell Wilson was the starter before, so they eliminated a lot of the questions and all that stuff. So you can only have a competition if both guys compete. Kenny Pickett never competed, and it was due to injury, but he never competed. So how could that be a competition? But it's funny that Mary Kay saying this now. This is something I said months ago. Another thing I want to get to – actually, we don't got to get to that. We can save that for later. I don't think it was a competition. I think that they put too many – they made it seem like it was a competition, but nothing you can do. So in a competition, you have to be able to move up and move down based on performance. Kenny Pickett still getting all those 707 reps, even though he wasn't able to go 11-on-11, he wasn't able to play in the games. That means he didn't move up or down, even though he wasn't able to, he couldn't do anything to look better, and he didn't move up or down. So how could that be a competition? I never thought we was going to get Kirk Cousins once we signed Joe Flacco. And Atlanta fumbled that situation. They thought people would be more desperate for Kirk Cousins, and that wasn't the situation. I think once we signed Joe Flacco, I was like, we're out on Kirk Cousins. He costs too much money. Yeah, Barry, I don't know where you heard that from. Shador is not starting this week. He ain't starting this week. Yeah, I don't know where you heard that. This week, he ain't starting. I haven't seen anything officially from the Browns. And another thing, the Browns will never say this early because practice for this week's game versus the Ravens just started. So they would never say this early that they're changing their starter. So, nah, they wouldn't do that. You would be giving away your competitive advantage. So, yeah, he ain't starting this week. Unless Flacco and Dylan Gabriel got injured away from the field. That's my point. Atlanta fumbled because they thought Kirk Cousins was more valuable. They thought Kirk Cousins was more valuable. They thought they could command more, and they thought they would have to pay less of his salary coming up. Brown signed Joe Flacco. Kirk Cousins was done. And also, another reason why I didn't think we were really going to get Kirk Cousins was because of his cost. I thought Kirk Cousins cost too much for the Browns to go out there and get him. So yeah, I didn't see the Kirk Cousins things happening unless Kirk Cousins got released. If they didn't release Kirk Cousins, I was like, the Browns not gonna get him. His salary is in the $20 or $30 million range. The Browns can't take on that. We're paying too much out the quarterbacks. You can't take on that. So that was a lot of people were saying that. I was like, the money's not gonna work. Money ain't gonna work. He costs too much. I'm not even saying I want Kirk Cousins. I would have took Kirk Cousins if he got released. If Kirk Cousins was released, I would say, okay, go grab him. But having to give up draft capital and having to take on his salary, I don't want Kirk Cousins for that. Only way we get Kirk Cousins if it's Russell Wilson. Like when Russell Wilson went to the Steelers, we signed him for the minimum. Atlanta still got to pay most of his salary. When that didn't happen, Kirk Cousins wasn't coming. He was not coming. I think this has been a great midweek check-in. Didn't get too much on the Ravens, but I will say this about the Ravens. That first drive where Cincinnati... But do you want to spend that whole 18 that you freed up on Kirk Cousins? Does Kirk Cousins move the needle enough to take on that much, to take on his contract and lose draft capital when you got so many holes you got to fill as a team? I don't see how that would work. I think only if Kirk Cousins was released. If he was released and we got the Russell Wilson situation like in Pittsburgh, I think that would have took him. I think once it came to give up draft capital and having to pay more of his salary, even if we did restructure Denzel, I don't think you do that just to get Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins doesn't come to this team and make this team a Super Bowl contender. So if you are a team that truly is a quarterback away, then you can try to make that deal for Kirk Cousins. The Browns, I don't think Kirk Cousins coming on this team as is without losing anything makes them a Super Bowl contender. I mean, maybe you disagree with that. Maybe you believe that he would have moved the needle enough. I don't think Kirk Cousins – I like Kirk Cousins when he's healthy, but I don't think he moves the needle that much coming to the Browns. So I don't think he does. Very quickly, let me jump on the Ravens real quick. Cincinnati, on that first drive, they ran the ball straight up the gut, and we saw what the Baltimore Ravens did, how they ran the ball versus Buffalo Bills. I'm concerned about the Browns stopping a run up the middle with Derrick Henry. The Browns usually do pretty solid against Lamar. We're able to force turnovers. Our defense matches up well against him, but I'm concerned about us stopping a run. So we're going to see how Mason Graham and Carson Schlesinger help us with stopping the run this week. That's my major concern. I will give my keys to victory Sunday pregame before the Browns kick off. I'll give my keys to victory. Shout out to everybody for being here. CJ, do you see Shador starting at all this year? I think the only way Shador is going to start is if Kevin Stefanski's job is on the line, unfortunately. Before the year, I would have said, yeah, I think Shador is going to get a couple games to start. The way it's looking, the longer – if it goes – this is – let me tell you his path to starting. If we end up 0-5, 0-6, and they go make a change and they put Dylan Gabriel as a starter, I can see that six games down. I can see Dylan Gabriel getting about four games. I think at that point, we will try to figure out. Let me finish that thought, then I'm gonna comment on that. I think that way he would get to play towards the end of the year. We would really get to see him play. I think based on how it's going, CJ, I don't know how he gets on the field the last two games of the year besides that. Unless we just start off really bad, I think he'll get to play. It's very weird. I don't know if he doesn't like him or if he isn't the biggest fan of him. Something seems to be off with how Stefanski views Shador to me. In Kevin's offense, I think he does. He goes from 7-8 win team to a 10 or 11. I don't know if the Browns are winning 7-8 games. I think this is a 6-win team, and I think that's getting to 6 wins is going to be hard after you didn't take care of business in game one. So, see, I don't think Shador is going to be traded because I'm telling you, I think this is. Hear me out real quick with this about Shador. If everything goes bad and you're trying to keep your, job and you got to sell hope to the fans, you got to sell hope to the general or to the ownership group. That's when you break Shador out. He's your get out of jail free card. You bring excitement. People are going to want to tune in and watch the games. If he shows some flashes of what we believe he can be, then you could buy yourself another year without getting fired. So I think that's what they're going to do for Shador. He doesn't like Kevin wants everything done in his system. Shador tries to get out of it. See, I agree with that. And I think Kevin's system is very rigid. But also the problem with that is every quarterback and coach, when they get to the next level, sometimes the quarterback is seeing something on the field that the coach didn't anticipate and they make something happen. When in 2023, when Amari Cooper and Joe Flacco were so well together and they were so connected, there were times where they got outside of what Kevin wanted to do. And they would see something like, hey, they're defending this like this. We can do this to take advantage of it. That's outside of Kevin's system. They did it and they saw results from it. So at some point, you got to allow your guys to go based on what they're actually seeing in real time. So Kevin struggled with when we had Baker. Baker wants to get off script. When him and Odell would see something, Kevin didn't want it. See, this is, I think to overly grade the preseason for Shador is, I would say it's not accurate, because I don't think Shador was prepared like you would want him to be when he was going into his start. So I think it's built in that it's going to be some misses there. It's going to be some misses. I always said Shador needed reps. You got to give him reps. So that's why I knocked the Kenny Pickett thing. That's why I knocked, you know, we're going to stash and trade a quarterback and all that. You need to give him reps. So that fair way to grade the rookies in preseason was look at the week that Dylan Gabriel had leading into him getting his start. That's ideally how you want it. That's not what Shador got. Shador played off of instincts in that game because he didn't get enough reps needed, and he didn't find out till like Wednesday that he was going to be starting. So you're going to miss. That's what happens. Find me a quarterback who's a rookie who doesn't get the amount of reps as everybody else, and then he just goes out and is perfect in that first game. And it be it preseason or regular season, you're not going to find it. You need the reps to get on timing. You need the reps to be able to see what they want from you at quarterback, and he didn't get that. He didn't get that. So, I mean, to overly grade it and overly criticize it, how could he? My question to you will be is, what leads you to believe he's not ready? If you tell me, this is what I'll agree if you say. If you say you don't like how he handled the pressure versus the Rams, I would agree with you. If you say, it's because of I'm trusting Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, and when they say he's not ready, then I don't agree with it. Because I don't think they're good enough. They haven't shown they are good enough at evaluating quarterbacks and evaluating key position players for me to say that I'm going to believe what they say. So if you say he didn't handle the pressure well versus the Rams, we on the same page. But if you say because of them, I don't believe they are good at evaluating talent in key positions. Because look at what they've done. Look at what they've done at kicker. The Browns had a worse kicking situation 4 out of the last 5 years. Who's responsible for determining the talent of kicker? The Browns quarterback situation. Deshaun Watson, I wanted to see him do better. He was trash last year before he got injured. Who's responsible for putting him out there every day? So then, CG, I got the same question for you. What's your reasoning for saying he's not ready to play? Like I said, if you want to go and say based on the Rams game, we're in agreement there. But if it's anything outside of what you saw him do versus the Rams, then I would have to disagree with you because of who is actually saying it. I don't believe in their ability. Okay. See, I agree with you there, Jeffrey. But how do you speed up that process? What do you need to happen to speed up that process? You need the one thing to happen that he's not getting. You need reps. You need reps. You need a ton of reps. Ton of reps. Think about this. Cam Ward is getting all the reps with the ones in Tennessee. He still has to speed up his process, and he got all the reps. It's like you want him to get somewhere without getting the tools or what he needs to get there. You got to get the reps to get there. Look at all the rookie quarterbacks. They're saying Jackson Dart not ready yet. Jackson Dart had more of a constant amount of reps than Shador did, and they're saying he's not ready. So make sure you hear clearly what I'm saying. There you go. Caleb Williams has been getting all the reps for 2 years. his process is still not sped up. So reps is important. So make sure y'all hear what I'm saying. I'm saying Shador needs more reps. He needs more reps to get to where I think he can go. But if, like I said, if it's just based on Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, that don't fly with me, because I seen them every week when they kept putting Deshaun Watson out there saying he gave us the best chance to win and everybody knew he didn't. I have to look at how they view the quarterback position differently. So that's all I'm saying. Shout out to y'all. This has been great. I like everything that y'all have been saying. I like this back and forth. This has been really good. I'll be going live. My live schedule's changed. I'll be going live on Sundays for Browns game, Mondays for the recap. We'll be doing a midweek check-in on Wednesdays. This is going to be the new schedule. Like, comment, and subscribe. And I got to get up out of here. I got to go. But I'll catch y'all in the next one. Peace.